A look back at the Oshkosh that was with 2008 National CFI of the Year Max Trescott. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. We're closing down Oshkosh 2009 with Max Trescott, 2008 CFI of the Year. Max, thanks very much for taking some time before we tear this place down.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thanks.
Let me start out by asking you about the thing that I thought was most interesting about Oshkosh this year, and that was the chance to meet the new FAA administrator, the first permanent FAA administrator we've had in a while. And he seemed to go over very well. I did notice that someone in the audience said it was great to finally have an administrator who's actually a pilot, and sorry about that, Bobby Sturgill, because he also qualified. But what did you think about Randy Babbitt, and what do you think about his positioning in terms of his career and philosophy going forward for the tasks that lie ahead?
I think we're really in an excellent position to have him. And I noted the same thing when somebody said that. And I thought, well, maybe they meant that Bobby Sturgill wasn't a permanent administrator. He was an acting administrator. So on that basis, maybe they were correct. The audience clearly was very, I think, warm to him and enthusiastic. I think he was saying the right kinds of things. And I think people felt that he has kind of a pilot's view of things. Mm-hmm. And that's just incredibly important. So some of the things that I heard, for example, a gentleman was called on from the audience. And he actually thought, thank Tom Poberesny for calling on him because he said, I'm going to be politically incorrect. And he then asked the administrator about through-the-fence agreements and so on. And one of the folks who worked for him spoke and said that, that's generally been their policy to oppose those at public airports. And Randy said, well, maybe that's something we need to re-examine a little bit. And I think that kind of open attitude is certainly appreciated by folks. On the other hand, on the flip side, somebody asked about medicals and said, gee, what about eliminating third-class medicals for a private pilot? Which kind of makes sense in a way if you look at what's going on with light sport, where a medical isn't required. So right. Why not do the same thing for private? And there, the administrator seemed far less open to changing that. He started talking about the level of risk and what was acceptable. And of course, Fred Tilton, the federal flight surgeon, also spoke as well, and got the strong sense that they weren't real open to that idea.
It has kind of produced an interesting phenomenon at air shows or at aviation events that are kind of half trade show, because you see a lot of folks who don't look real healthy kicking tires on LSAs, and you wonder what would happen if they flung the door open to larger, more capable aircraft in that regard. But I think just as they're looking at, the FAA appears to be looking at the ASTM process for industry consensus standards as a possible way to maybe do what are now Part 23 certificated aircraft in the future, I wonder if they will take a look at driver's license medicals for private pilots.
It's certainly possible, but he did speak actually to one thing regarding LSA accident rates and so on. He said that, I believe the number was 8,100 LSAs certified out in the field, which stunned me. I had no idea that many had been shipped, but when you've got 1,000 companies shipping them, you only need to... we're both joking on that. We know that the number is probably closer to 100 companies shipping light sport to aircraft. But when that occurs, then that's a pretty good base to work with. And what he mentioned was that the accident rate for LSAs thus far has been commensurate with the general aviation aircraft population. So that says, so far, we're not seeing problems with people having no medicals. So if that were to continue to be the case, well, that might be the kind of data that would allow them to consider doing driver's licenses for privates in the future.
I was over talking to the guys at Stratus Aircraft, and they have an aircraft that if in a perfect world, if they had all their financing and lined up and everything else was going fine, they'd be talking 2 years down the road before they have to commit to a particular avionics package for that aircraft. And I was talking to Michael Lemaire, who is their CEO, and he said that we're just going to wait, because between now and 2 years from now, the world's going to change again. What have you seen? Have you seen anything that surprised you in the avionics world? Because you're very close to that, being acknowledged as somewhat of an expert and obviously an author on the G1000 in particular.
Sure. Yeah, I think there were a lot of announcements in this area, and I probably didn't catch anywhere near all of them. But early in the week, Garmin announced just a flood of new products. What really caught my eye was a repackaging of the Garmin G600. And just from a couple data points I have, it looks like Aspen Avionics has been outselling the G600. So what they've done is they've bundled some new products into the G600 to make it a greater value for the roughly $29,000 that they're charging for. But they took one more step, and that is they came out with the G500, which is essentially a $15,000 version, which strips out some of the products. It clearly, in my mind, that looks like they were looking to go head-to-head with the competition from Aspen, who has done extremely well in this retrofit market. But what was also interesting is the G500 is not strictly for retrofits, but it's also going to go into some new aircraft, like some of the older Pipers, which are now going back into production again. I believe it was the Piper Archer, they said, is now going to ship with this lower-cost alternative to the G1000. So that's pretty neat. They also have a series of traffic awareness systems, which they're now selling. And probably the most interesting development for me was the visual HUD, which of course was initially announced a couple of months ago back at Lakeland. Well, in that 3 months, they have totally repackaged that product. What that did originally was, if you were flying at night, you could have a visual HUD, which would project on the back of your spinning propeller all of your airspeed and altitude and that kind of information. Well, the feedback they got was, gee, we'd like to be able to use this in the daytime as well. So in 3 months, they've repackaged it from a 4-pound 20-amp system to a 1-pound 4-amp system, which works in the daytime and at nighttime, which I think is fascinating. And the other thing that they've done is they now have cameras which integrate and provides an infrared view on the back of the propeller. So as you're looking ahead, you can see on your propeller what should be looming ahead in the fog ahead of you. And that's pretty remarkable.
We're talking here with Max Trescott as we close down AirVenture 2009. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, and we're talking about what we saw at AirVenture this year. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you have not been to AirVenture, you have to put it on your bucket list. And don't wait until it's a bucket list to come, because it's a great thing to see. Max, we saw an announcement that I didn't think was too surprising, given the Alliance for Aviation Across America and some of the other collaborative things we've seen among the Alphabet groups. But EAA and AOPA signed a formal memo of understanding to work together on common interests. There seem to be a lot of common interests. They've both taken a very aggressive anti-user fee stand. Obviously, the TSA, is an issue that affects both groups. What do you read into that, and is this a significant announcement?
Well, this is really significant. Those of us who've been kind of watching from the outside in the past have always known that there's been a certain amount of competitiveness between the organization, and to the extent that both are member organizations, and if they feel that pilots might pony up $40 only to one organization, well, they would like that money to come to their organization. But I think probably the backdrop for this, a couple of different things. We've had some changes in the leadership in the organizations. Of course, president, if you will, for AOPA, Craig Fuller, and of course EAA is right now looking for a new president. We'll probably hear something about that in the near future. But given the attack that GA has come under in the last 6 months, particularly in Congress and to some extent from the White House, I think both organizations realize that this is a small industry. We need to all band together, and that we have a lot of common interests. So clearly, the regulatory that you mentioned is common. Talk to the regulatory people for both AOPA and EAA today. They're working closely together. AOPA has a new guy who used to work for DHS. I can't think of a better person to interface with DHS and the TSA than someone who spent 4.5 years working for the organization. That's Craig Spence, and I think that bodes very well. Even on the lower kind of levels, I was up in the EAA Museum where the EAA headquarters is located, and gosh, there were AOPA members, or not members, but staff members, floating around in that building, unescorted in the executive offices, talking with some of the vice presidents of EAA. They talked about, who they'd met with counterparts at AOPA this past week. So at all levels of the organization, one thing you and I talked about earlier was at the NAFI tent. NAFI has the Learn to Fly tent here, which I think is one of the most important tents, you know, at Oshkosh. And they'd taken on their own initiative to invite AOPA to be part of that tent. And the story I heard of it was that when Tom Pomerezny, president of EAA, walked into the tent, big smile on his face when he noticed, hey, that team had decided to get together and put AOPA in the tent. So we're seeing that level of integration at all levels, and that's just really a wonderful thing for the industry.
Let me close by just asking you, as you wandered around, did anything catch your eye at Oshkosh this year? I saw a couple of things I thought were very fun, especially the subsonics, the sonic single-engine, single-place jet, which may or may not become an actual product someday. Is there anything you saw that you just kind of stopped and smiled or looked up and said, wow?
Sure. I mean, what was really big here was, of course, the A380. That goes without saying. In fact, just to let you know how big a draw that was, and we talked earlier, attendance has been phenomenal. Midway through the week, attendance was up double digits over what it was last year. I don't know what the final numbers would be, but clearly, with the great weather we've had the last couple days, big, big show. I was standing in the parking lot when the A380 came in, and a couple walked up to me and said, oh, can we, you know, sit down here next to your car? Well, of course. Yeah. And the husband whipped out the camera, the A380 came by, they shot their pictures, and they said, okay, we've got what we want, we're ready to go now. So they had driven in from Milwaukee, paid for, you know, parking, you know, took their picture of the A380 flying by, and then went home. So clearly the A380 was a huge draw this year. Probably one of the most compelling things I saw was two different independent films, one of which is out, another which is still in production. So up in the theater in the EAA Museum, Monica Petrillo was showing her flyabout documentary. It's a 74-minute movie that she put together to document her circumnavigation of Australia a few years ago with her father. And the subtext of the movie is kind of interesting. It had a number of different themes at different levels. And part of it was really about a young woman's emergence into adulthood, her relationship with her father, the struggles that they had on the trip, since she was the more proficient of the two pilots. And, of course, he was a German, you know, father from Munich, who, of course, felt very strongly that, you know, he knew how to fly the airplane. Yeah. So it was very beautiful in terms of also the wildlife, showed just all kinds of fascinating scenery, animals, things like that. So I absolutely love the flyabout film by Monica Petrillo. The Wilco Films guys, they are doing a bang-up job. Two independent filmmakers from California, they showed their third trailer that was premiered on Friday night in the fly-in theater. These gentlemen have interviewed probably close to 100 different people in aviation, and they are in the process now of attempting to raise $1 million to finish the film, and they're looking to distribute it, you know, internationally through any different venue they can find. So I think the really great thing about Oshkosh is there are lots of entrepreneurs, whether they be in the movies or whether they be in training materials or in hardware, and this is the place that they come to, you know, plant the seeds of what they're working on, to find other collaborators to help them and to make their dreams come real. So I think the wonderful thing about EAA is that it's a nurturing environment, it's a wonderful community of people, and really is the best of everything there is about aviation. It's where we also get a view of what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, if you see it here, you know it's going to happen sometime in the future.
I guess we couldn't get out of here without mentioning White Knight 2, or as it's now called, VMS Eve.
Right.
What a bizarre looking aircraft. When you look at it sitting on the ramp, it looks as if a semi-conventional looking airplane taxied up next to a mirror. I mean, it's got that odd little bend in the middle where the wings join, but that actually is a single piece, 140-foot long composite spar that goes all the way across there. And just the remarkable engineering in that story. It's not going to be too long here before we're launching people into space from Oshkosh.
No, absolutely. It was fun to see Richard Branson take off in that airplane. On the second day it was here, I looked as they were doing what looked like to be about a 30 or 40 degree bank turn, and it was the most interesting perspective to see a plane shaped like that. Imagine taking a P-38 Lightning and then just kind of stretching it, yeah. You know, from left to right, you know, with a huge space in the middle, and then seeing that in a turn. Come to think of it, back to the A380, somebody commented, so when they do a steep turn, which they did over here, do they have to request a block altitude to do that because the wings are so long? And you know, the White Knight, too, is kind of like that as well, too.
Well, I don't know. What about you, Max? I think I'll be back next year.
You know, I absolutely love this place. And, oh, did I show you the new thing that I brought here to... Of course, you know that I've been back behind my computer for the last 9 months.
Oh, yeah.
And so the reason I'm looking so happy and relieved here is that a week ago, from the printer came my new book, which is Max Truscott's GPS and WAS Instrument Flying Handbook, which is basically everything you need to know about flying with either a 430, 530, G1000, or many, many other GPSs in your aircraft. So that was a lot of fun to debut that here and get people's reactions. And I'm looking forward to not starting another book here for a few more weeks and enjoying my summer.
All right. Well, listen, if someone wants to find out more about the Max Truscott Empire, the place to go would be maxtruscott.com. They'll find your blog. They'll find your links to your flight training and availability and your work with the G1000 training materials. And is there anything else in the world of Max these days?
There is, and there will be another announcement within a week or two about even new stuff we haven't even talked about.
All right. Max Truscott is the 2008 National CFI of the Year. And you can find out more at the URL above mentioned. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.